Hello, and welcome to the Learning Made podcast. I'm Shannon Ryder, your host. In this podcast, we speak to subject matter experts in K-12, higher education, and workforce development to learn more about advances and issues in the industry from cradle to career. Today, I'm joined by Andrew Lippert, an independent technology executive and consultant with deep experience leading digital transformation in education and enterprise SaaS. Andrew brings a unique background from Navy pilot to self-taught developer to executive leader, and he has a strong track record of modernizing platforms and translating innovation into learner impact. In this episode, we talk about what it takes to execute large-scale edtech transformations, exploring his playbook for people, practice, and production, the realities of AI implementation at scale, and the shift from fragmented silos towards continuous deployment and self-service-oriented architectures. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Shannon. Pleasure to be here.
So I was really excited to talk to you originally about your career path, which is quite unique, from Navy pilot to self-taught software developer to leading large-scale ed tech transformation. So I would love for you to tell our audience, how did you end up where you are right now?
Sure. It is a bit of a checkered history.
I love it.
My original foray into compute was back in the late 70s when my dad brought home an Apple II computer and hooked it up to the Heathkit television that he'd built. And as you can imagine, it's an interesting configuration given where we are in technology today. But I learned how to program in Pascal and assembly and played around a bit. In high school, my junior year, I actually sold a software application to a real estate company, unknowingly putting a number of clerical staff out of work because the program I'd written allowed them to fill in this real estate form that they typically had to type manually over and over again anytime there was an edit. But the computer program made it all automatic. And I saw kind of stunningly how the technology was going to change career trajectories, and really got intrigued by the power of software and software as a business. But this is back before Microsoft was founded, and the software industry had yet to emerge.
And automation wasn't quite the buzzword that it is right now, right?
Precisely. It's obviously gone through transformations itself. But I paid my way through college doing consulting and computers and making beer money, and was an ROTC candidate, and graduated, went to flight school down in Pensacola, learned how to fly airplanes for the Navy. But I was the most popular lieutenant in the squadron because I carried around my Macintosh and ImageWriter dot matrix printer on deployments. And all the captains and admirals wanted me to print their presentations out in color so that they could look good with the senior staff. But that begat a number of conversations with software teams that are also pilots working in the reserves. And one of them finally said, hey, you're really good at this computer stuff. You should come check out the internet thing that's happening. So I left the Navy, joined an internet startup called ICAT Corporation, transforming L.L. Bean and Land's End catalogs into CD-ROMs and then ultimately onto the web. I was hooked. I was literally hooked by the opportunity to take transformative business systems and change them with software. That led to immediately getting positions of greater responsibility, managing a QA department, managing a software engineering department, build and deploy. I was ultimately responsible for the architecture and development of a software storefront vending machine. So small businesses could sign up and have a catalog online with the ability to put things in a shopping cart and pay for it. Back way before Amazon. So it's a lot of interesting waypoints along the path, ultimately ending up in a company that Paul Allen had founded called Apex Learning. And Apex at the time was making its transition from physical discs to the internet, and transforming education for those who were underprivileged, unable to access some of the opportunities. Apex Learning was about AP curriculum and giving kids in rural Iowa who may have one student interested in calculus or statistics in a school, it just wasn't economically feasible for them to get access. So Apex filled that gap. And that really started for me an appreciation for the double bottom line that EdTech represents. You can really help create opportunities and do good while doing well as a business. And that was about 25 years ago. I've been doing ed tech ever since. I've had stops along the way at Amazon and Intel back in the early days, subsequent to Apex Learning, working on a thing called Zookazoo, which is a virtual world for kids, Biznik, an online community for small business owners, Redbird Advanced Learning, taking a Stanford thought experiment and turning it into a commercial product that McGraw-Hill ultimately purchased. Worked at McGraw-Hill for about 8 years, really transforming that organization operationally and architecturally. And then finally at Edmentum, where the same kind of playbook was at play, where the company had acquired a number of organizations and had yet to really reconcile their platform architecture and the solutions that they offered customers. Really looks like 8 different companies, depending on which product you're purchasing. So the mandate there was to transform the organization, transform the process, and transform the architecture to really pull together something cohesive that allowed the organization to scale and serve customers much more efficiently and effectively. So I really do see the impact of the work that I'm able to do. And it's day to day in the eyes of kids who recognize that they really can take on these subject matter and learn. The solutions that I've built and deployed over the years have impacted thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of millions of students. So I'm particularly proud of that aspect of my career. And I think it's been an interesting way to grow, learn, change, and develop a skill set that's appropriate for helping organizational transformation occur as well.
Yeah, you know, I've been in the industry for about 27, 28 years, and it's easy to forget about the impact that you're making with students. I also started working with CD-ROMs and diskettes and all of that media and watching it transform. Where it used to be the extra, right? We would call it the thud factor. Like, what are all the things we can throw at that, you know, and now it's leading. I want to go back to that playbook. So you've described this playbook before. It's focused on people, practice, and production. What are those like core principles behind that framework, and how have you seen it in multiple cases work?
Yeah, I think transformation occurs first with the culture of an organization. And that's really one of the foundational aspects of the playbook that I bring when I'm helping an organization shift and grow, transform. Teams that traditionally have been asked to answer the order pipeline and serve as short order cooks, if you will, don't really get an appreciation for the level of impact that their work has. Building and developing a sense of ownership with teams from not just the software development and quality delivery, but the operational aspects, the ongoing efficiency of the solution, and its ability to actually solve real problems as effectively as possible helps to shift the culture. That requires some significant steps in many organizations to unlock the potential for teams to truly own their own destiny. In many organizations that have moved through the traditional DevOps evolutionary path, there's a sense of throwing things over the wall where the software development team creates something at the behest of a product manager that gets tossed over to the development operations team for deployment, and the cloud ops team keeps it running. When something goes wrong, it comes back and everybody has to scramble to fix it.
Round and round it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The ownership mentality really puts the keys to the kingdom in the hands of the team so that they can also understand how things are working in the operational environment, how scaling happens, how the economics work from a request to unit economics perspective to ensure that the business side is also being managed. And they get much closer to the problem space and really begin to develop creative solutions to those things. But the culture must sit atop a really solid framework for collaboration, where the complete value of the organization is a result of the multiple perspectives and the brains that come together to think about, articulate, identify, and develop solutions to real human problems. It's not enough to just throw something at the wall to see what sticks. You've got to really understand how technology can shape and build solutions and sequences that beget success with customers, that support sales, that ensure that the marketing is effective, that deliver experiences to the customer that are truly delightful and have the customer coming back for more. And that's where the customer experience becomes so critical. And it's in the craft of the work that we do. Top culture and collaboration, having a sense of the craft of developing solutions and delivering them effectively to customers goes beyond just solid software architecture or the right kind of function, the right database architecture. It goes beyond the mere construction, but an appreciation for the design, the reliability, the observability, the scalability, all of the, if you will, the illities that become part of an effective solution and something that sits in market and solves the problems we need. So it's something that's delightful and dependable. So for me, it's really those three principles: culture, collaboration, and craft that come together to produce a transformative event for an organization.
You need to trademark that, first of all, because I think that's brilliant. I'm actually, there's a lot of transformation that happens regularly. And I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, bringing multiple companies together. You know, we at Learning Mate have gone through that with Strive and Double Line, yes, multiple organizations. Breaking down silos is always, and also I think what you said, because I also lead a team of people, it is easier to see how important that aspect of craft is when you get to a leadership level, and less so when you're in the weeds. And
really,
so,
well said.
You know, that's one of the challenges. Mm-hmm. What are some other challenges that organizations face when, like, trying to unify those experiences, mm-hmm, across organization, across, you know, position throughout the organization?
Yeah, there's historically, I've found, especially in, you know, frankly, private equity backed organizations, the synergies trump the, from a financial perspective, they trump the synergies available in the cohesive construction of a solution that spans across the properties that have been purchased and pulled together. In many cases, you're looking for the cost carve outs first, as opposed to the synergistic multiplicative effects of bringing together the power of multiple capabilities and solutions. McGraw-Hill, frankly, Redbird, Edmentum, all sort of ignored the step that comes after you acquire a company. They went straight to the efficiency gains and took the top line revenue generation and added it to the top line that existed. They took the bottom line and tried to cut out as much as they could so that they could have a financial story that played well from a market perspective. But it really didn't address the needs of the customer base and how synthesizing and frictionlessly enabling access to the capabilities of the multiple solutions coming together was key. At Edmentum, most recently, we did a lot of work to move beyond a very legacy data center-centric architecture so that we could have a foundational service-oriented solution that would allow us to then pull the pieces apart that were the various platforms that had been purchased over time and bring them together into a singular solution where a customer had access to the various tools and techniques, the technologies that were available, without having to create a second account or a third account or a fourth account with Edmentum. And that was a lot of work, not inexpensive work and not something that's done overnight. So when you're bringing in a new company, pulling together an acquisition, I think it's critically important that you focus the initial phase and attention on the integration, the coalescence of the capabilities and experiences, not simply look at how this is accretive to the top line and how much money you can save on the bottom line to make the margins bigger. And that's a hard thing for many organizations to do. Hence my little playbook. And the opportunity to take it to new organizations and help pull people through the past into a state where they've got a solid data foundation, can build solutions leveraging emerging technologies, and efficiently deliver new services, new capabilities, and something cohesive and delightful for customers, so they come back wanting more.
So I love that you've used the word delightful a couple of times. We have an engage learning design framework that we use.
Yes.
And so the very first thing is enchant. It's delight and enchant are you know, mm-hmm. along the same lines, and how important it is to engage the learner, engage the process, and not just the learner, but engage the client even, engage
Absolutely.
Our customers. Yeah. I will make a pivot because I feel like we could talk, all day, but I did want to just make sure that we touched upon AI.
Absolutely.
And then I have a couple of other questions after that, but it's evolving incredibly fast. You and I have been in the industry since diskettes and CD-ROMs, from your perspective, what separates today, like, meaningful implementation of AI versus simply like AI just for the sake of it?
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of folks out there looking at deploying iCandy AI, stuff that it looks great, less filling perhaps, but does it really actually solve a human problem? Does it actually address a need, or is it great demoware? Mm-hmm. I am of the opinion that it's when you have tools and technologies like AI deployed in service of supporting the customer in achieving a new or different outcome that you're actually going to produce value. And so it's not just, can I put a little chatbot on the side to allow you to ask questions about the material on the page and interact with you dynamically with a conversational aspect, but can you get to a level of appreciation for and understanding of what the individual is actually looking to understand, achieve, and produce, and address that directly. One of the things that we're working on, or we're working at Adventum, was a suite of solutions that allowed to scaffold and support the writing process, for example. Here is a very ripe problem. When a student is learning to write, and in a classroom of 35 students, when 35 students are learning to write with a single teacher, the feedback loop between student, their example, and an educator is extended. And it's a really challenging one to fill. But the more rapidly you can assist, direct, support a student in the learning process, the more rapidly they'll achieve true learning objectives. And that extends through opening up the scalability quotient for this particular activity, where the educator is the bottleneck. They are really constrained in their ability to see at each step what a student is doing, thinking, and achieving. Turn in your graphic organizer and I'll turn it back out to you the next day, and then you can move on. That's a obvious time-sucking cycle that impedes student learning. So one of the things we're looking at doing is crafting a suite that not only returns feedback rapidly, can see what the student's working on, can understand where they are headed with their writing example, but opens up from a freedom perspective the areas that the student can go from an expression mm-hmm. perspective as well. The AI models have the ability to understand and understand in a compute sort of proximity-based statistical way,
sure.
but still
yeah.
understand no less. And given that context, provide some of that feedback within the cycle that could be incredibly valuable. And the beauty of a solution in this space is that it's no longer bound by the educator wall clock and their time. It frees the educator up to be more explicitly focused on the critical aspects of the learning process. And it's a solution that could only scale with a technology-based answer. You simply couldn't deploy 35 teaching assistants to be following along with each student's progress in the writing process. This technology can do that. And it can allow the students to explore independent paths and still get reinforcement on a particular learning objective or outcome, which is tremendously powerful and very unique. And obviously it extends, you can take it to a logical conclusion and say, now I'm going to allow the machines to actually assess whether the student is the original author of the work and give them an interactive assessment on their submission in real time so that you can tell the educator, yeah, it's likely Shannon actually did this paper because she was able to answer questions about her work interactively in real time, which is a much more powerful proof point than some sort of plagiarism detection or something that's going to go out and trying to say an AI generated this work. It's a virtuous reinforcement loop empowered by the emerging technologies.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I mean, and we're all looking at how to AI proof assessments and writing. And I think that there's a lot to learn there. It does allow the student in that case, too, to iterate over and over more rapidly and more effectively. Seeing their own progression of work, at their fingertips could be really impactful.
Yes. It's a very virtuous reinforcement loop.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We deal with a lot of publishers at mm-hmm. Learning Mate, and those folks that are obviously releasing for, fall classes, spring classes, or whatnot. You had made a point that stood out, the idea of like EdTech doing away with summer release cycles and more towards mm-hmm. this continuous deployment. Why has the industry sort of struggled with this shift when it seems to make sense and have rolling updates and rolling content available on the fly? So what's been the struggle, do you think, getting there?
Yeah, well, I think there's a good aspect of culture and past practice. Traditionally, we talk about professional development as being the thing that's going to ensure that the educators understand how to use the solutions we're putting in their hands. And that professional development is constrained. It's time boxed towards the very beginning of the school year and prep periods before the kids arrive. And Lord knows how many different tools a given educator is going to need to be learning during any given summer period. And we're weak as an industry in supporting the life cycle of the user and understanding where they are in their familiarity with our solutions and what they can do for them, let alone the scaffolding and supports that would help them be more effective in their leverage of our technologies. So for me, one of the most critical things is not just the tick-tock of the release cadence, but also the respect and honor we represent in our solutions for the user's life and their experience of our solution. First day, you got to get signed up. That's the easy thing. Second day, you got to check and make sure the rosters came over from the SIS completely. What do you do third day? And how do I ease you in from an on-ramp perspective to your understanding of the solution that we're offering and how it can make a difference for you and your kids in the classroom? Most of our technologies as an ed tech ecosystem require a change in classroom practice. And that's non-trivial, especially at scale. Yeah. Can you imagine an entire district trying to change classroom practice in every single classroom to adopt a technology solution? That's a lot. That's a lot to ask. And our industry has subsequently said, well, we're going to make it all these great big bang things in summer so that you get everything out all at once and can train everybody on everything. But they're not even ready to hear it until they're 6 months in using the solution. Mm-hmm. So personally, I think there's a software development cycle, a release cadence that's much more reflective of the traditional SaaS industry where you can release at any time. You just need to make the feature set logically accessible and scaffold the leverage, the understanding and deployment of those capabilities in the classroom when it makes sense, mm-hmm. when the teacher and the students are ready for it. They don't have to turn on every single bell and whistle on day one. They wouldn't be able to understand it all. Mm. So how do you make the software respect that experience and help along the way, which eliminates any need to do great big software releases in the middle of summer where everything's coming together at once? That's the time to be focused on onboarding, account provisioning and implementation, not, hey, here's all these new bells and whistles. I would much prefer, and I think it's a much more logical approach to roll things out incrementally over the course of the year and keep people engaged with the evolution of your solution.
Mm, yeah, that makes complete sense. Okay, so I have one last real question, because I was looking at your bio and I know that, you know, you've joined our advisory board.
Yes.
What made you say yes? You've seen us over the years, Learning Mate. Learning Mate was actually also a vendor of mine when I was at McGraw and I was at Pearson. So I hired Learning Mate. But I always like to get, you know, your feedback on what makes Learning Mate, you know, stand out as an organization you want to align with.
The thing I love about Learning Mate is the breadth and depth of the capabilities that the company's developed. And with the Strive partnership acquisition, that extends even further beyond just quote unquote the traditional ed tech ecosystem. Because ed techs and schools and districts, they're more than just teaching and learning systems. They've got school districts, an entire city with transportation and meal services and social services. It's crazy how much they have to deal with. Yeah. And for me, it's really about looking at how a partner like Learning Mate can help across that spectrum. And Learning Mate's done, of all of the ed tech providers, from my perspective, the best job at really filling out a comprehensive portfolio of capabilities and services that companies like Edmentum or other organizations like McGraw-Hill can pick and choose from. The work that you've done most recently in data analytics and the shaping of foundational systems that allow you to leverage emerging technologies like AI is crucial for the industry. You've got rubber meets the road experience now that is incredibly valuable when an organization like Edmentum is looking for a partner to help navigate those worlds. It was one of the first things I had to do at Edmentum. The database architecture was, it was a shambles. and Learning Mate's got services that can help understand, craft a strategy, and then also implement. The work that's been done with Frost and the evolution of Cadal are clear examples of remaining at the forefront from a technical perspective, addressing the needs that are particular to our industry in highly efficient, effective ways. You look at the adoption of Cadal and the rate of folks picking up and using that solution. It's hitting real need. And you've got a seat in the firmament that's unique, central. Everybody knows Learning Mate. Learning Mate knows everybody. And there's a solution in there that is going to fit your point of time and point of need very elegantly. You just need to go have a conversation, figure out what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good insight. I have the same feeling. I also think with Learning Mate and now part of Strive, that we're like an ed tech startup feel that can scale. Like we have the agility, we have the personal relationship, but we also have this ability to scale. And I think that that's something that we hopefully, you know, can hang our hat on for many years to come. So glad that you're a part of our advisory board and that you took the time to speak to me today. I do want to thank you so much. We're coming to the end of our time. So do you have any last words that you want to impart?
Shannon, it was absolutely a pleasure, as usual, speaking to you, and I look forward to our next opportunity. Thank you.
That's great. Awesome. Well, thank you all for tuning into the Learning Mate podcast. A huge thank you to Andrew for joining us today and sharing his insights on digital transformation, platform modernization, and the future of ed tech and AI. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes and visit learningmate.com/podcast for resources and show notes. I'm Shannon Ryder. Until next time, keep advancing learning from cradle to career.